Hello, and welcome to On Staging, a community theater discussion podcast highlighting community theater productions in Calgary and the surrounding area. I'm Kyle Gould, and today I have the esteemed privilege to sit down and chat with Karen Stevenson and Laura Ferguson with Windmill Theater Players, who are presenting Grease, running from April 19th through April 27th. The link to tickets is in the show notes. Windmill Theater Players have been producing community theater for 50 years now, stretching back to 1974 with their production of The Matchmaker and Cactus Flower. Over the years, over 1,200 people have been involved in the 99 productions that Windmill has presented in their time in High River. That's right, Grease is their 99th production. Laura Ferguson herself has been with Windmill for 37 years now, who initially in the article that I read was following in the footsteps of her costumer mother, Frances Ferguson. However, I have been informed prior to the start of this podcast that that was indeed backwards and that Laura brought her mother in to the productions with Windmill Theatre back in 1993. Laura is the musical director for this production of Grease, and I'm joined today as well by the director of the production, Karen Stevenson. This is Karen's first time in the director's seat, but she's done almost everything else, from choreographer and on with Windmill. Karen, Laura, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having us.
So Grease is a send-up of 1950s working-class youth subculture that was brought to life for the first time in 1971, just a few years before Windmill Theater put up its first production. But this was done in Chicago. It went on to Broadway a year later for a 3,388 performance run, the longest run yet in Broadway history, only to be surpassed by A Chorus Line 3 years later. Fitting that both Chorus Line and Grease are being done in the same year here in Calgary and the area. Grease saw success on the West End, and in 1978, when I was 3.5 months old, it was turned into what I think most people know of today, the feature film with John Travolta and Olivia Newton-John. Grease has, from what I can tell, been watered down, toned down, and transformed over the 50-plus years of its existence. What is it about Grease that led Windmill to pick it for their spring production this year?
Well, I was considerably older than 3 months when I lined up.
You say considerably, but I don't think it's considerably.
I was probably 9 months old when I lined up at the theater to watch it with my family. And I just remembered it was being shown in High River at our Little Wales Theater. That seating capacity was really small.
Oh, yeah.
And it was lined up around the corner. I was in that line. And my whole family, my mom was watching commercials of it on TV, and she'd be mopping the floor, singing the songs before we ever even saw the show. So I knew it was going to be big.
Did she have the record?
I think it was from commercials, because I remember we got the record after the movie came out, and I had the record and the book and the poster and all the things.
So you're a Grease head.
Well, I guess, yeah.
Yeah, this is something like you've loved Grease since you saw it.
Since I was little, yeah. So we lined up, we got in. I knew it was going to be big because my mom didn't technically really, you know, sing a ton when she mopped the floor. And it was huge, and we loved it. And all of my friends in school went to see it too. So I was in school. I was a little older than 9 months.
Yes.
And everybody went, and it was like literally Grease fever in High River.
Oh,
like
yeah.
It genuinely was. And the radio stations had contests to win a Grease album, and my sister won it. I didn't.
It was huge.
And I just remember it. I remember it being sort of one of those few movies that I like vividly remember going to as a kid. And I love musicals. And yeah, I just loved it. It was one of those feel good, nostalgic. I mean, at the time, I don't know that I felt like it was totally nostalgic, but just a really feel good thing. And honestly, I started with Windmill much later, but I have been all over the directors. We got to Grease. We got to Grease. We got to Grease.
So you've been pitching this for years.
I have been pitching it since I got involved
confirmed?
In Windmill.
Not offering to direct it.
Well, never.
Okay.
Just bugging people to direct it.
Bugging. One of our big directors, Karen King, she used to give me rides, and I used to just constantly
barrage her.
And she always said, no, it's too risque for small town High River. They sing about things that, you know, small town High River shouldn't sing about, and refuse to do it.
Wow.
So I finally just decided. time.
Okay. Then we did Young Frankenstein.
Yeah.
Right.
Last year.
Yeah.
And Karen saw that one and thought, if we can do Young Frankenstein with the tits, 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 tits song, right. Why can't we do
why
Grease?
Can't you
and
do Grease?
So then she submitted it herself and we were all
so
over it.
I did.
This last year was the first year you submitted it to direct it yourself.
Yes.
And you hadn't done that before.
Never. And so I had.
How many times did you submit it though?
Never.
Like for somebody else to direct it?
Oh, never. I mean, I literally talked about it in the car with the director. And honestly, even like my husband's involved in Windmill.
What does he do for Windmill?
He acts.
Okay.
He's mainly acted for Windmill. I don't know that he's done other jobs. He helps with like when there's sets and stuff to be built. He does it. He helps out. But really, he's just mainly acted for Windmill. And so when you get him good and drunk on a holiday, I can convince him that we should do Grease. And then, you know, he sobers up and says, I'm not directing a play. And yeah, when Laura, who's with us, she directed Young Frankenstein, her and another girl, Miranda, with the group. When they sang about tits, I was like, okay, we can do this.
Right.
And I commented to Windmill, I said, we should do this. And my co-director, Jim, his wife, Darlene, made a joke. Oh, that's a slippery slope. Hmm. And I said, why is that? Well, no. So I said to her, why is that slippery? Like, I think we're ready to do Grease. And she said, no, that's a joke. Grease is slippery.
Right.
I didn't see it either.
I think also one of our concerns was being able to get enough teenagers, enough youth in it to be able to do that. And I mean, it shows in the cast that we've got over probably half of them are from Calgary. And so we had to know that we would be able to get enough. And we kind of almost were like, do we have a backup plan if this does not fly at auditions?
Let's
like
jump
if
we at that
don't get enough people?
Yeah, let's jump into that in a section. Second, I still want to go back. So you finally submitted this to direct it.
Yes.
You hadn't directed before. Had you assistant directed or done anything? What made you feel like you needed to step up and direct this production?
I really wanted to do it. Nobody else was ever agreeing to do it. Mind you, I didn't ask a ton of people. I just constantly asked the same person. But when Darlene made the joke about the slippery slope, her husband, Jim, has directed a ton of Windmill plays, like the early plays. Mm-hmm. He hasn't directed one in 30 years. And we were talking about it on Facebook, like Messenger. And all of a sudden she said, I'll direct it with you. By the way, this is Jim. And Jim, like he's been in retirement for 30 years. I thought, holy crap, like Jim's going to come out of retirement and do this with me?
Wow.
So then I said, let's just put a pin in that and kind of like walked away because I thought, I can't do this. And honestly, my husband said, yes, you can. Like I've done choreography. I've undertook like various things in my life that I literally think I can't do that. Like I'm faking it. People think I'm better at things than I truly am. And then I pull it off and Bill's like, you can do this. That's my husband, Bill. And then immediately Laura. Laura is probably the most talented musical person I know. No, you are. She should have been on Broadway, literally. And so when she said, yeah, I'll do music, I knew like we got this.
Right.
Yeah. Now we just need the kids.
With Windmill Theater, when a person wants to direct and they haven't directed before, the executive always has somebody do it with them. It's always kind of a mentorship activity, or at least a member of the executive is there just to make sure everything's cool.
Even if they have done as many productions as Karen has?
Yes, because directing is a whole other ball of wax. There are so many things, like even I'm sure Karen can attest to, things that you had no idea is required when you are directing. And so, and as a director at Windmill, there's...
Like what?
Yeah, like Laura, like, you know, she said to me, okay, you have to pick out the readings that people are going to do at auditions. You have to pick out synopsis of the characters. You have to say their vocal range. You have to come up with the rehearsal schedule, which thankfully you and Jim did.
Right. Just knowing what, just, I think it's the knowledge, right? That I think you don't know until you do know. Mm-hmm. And for this, yeah, all of those things, how much planning goes into it before auditions even come around. Like that, the fact that you can't show up to a rehearsal without a plan. You know, there are people that would think, oh, I'll just do this on the fly. And
has that happened to Windmill in the past?
It has happened in the past. How to talk to the cast, how to build team, just so many different skills that you need to have, or at least have knowledge that you need to have them in order to make it successful.
I see.
The reason that we did that was because we did have an issue at one point with someone.
You think
who,
the producer would be responsible for like at least getting those assets? Like the producer would be the one who's saying, hey, I'm going to need these character bios or whatnot from you in order to put together the audition component. Is that not the producer's role? Or is that how it's, is it done differently at Windmill?
If the producer was somebody who had directed before, I suppose that they would do that. But I think that mentorship is really kind of our best way to do that, that we've found, is just to have somebody, even an assistant, if somebody comes in as an assistant director who has done it before. When I said to you, we need to have the synopsis and things, and she's like, well, what? You know, like, I think just having an example, or this is what a rehearsal schedule looks like.
Right.
Let me give you my rehearsal schedule from Young Frankenstein. This is kind of how you build it. And this is, yeah.
So her proposal. Her proposal. She gave me her proposal from Young Frankenstein, because I don't know hall rental. I don't know what anybody spends on advertising. I don't know what to expect for costumes. Like all of those things.
All
that
those
I've
things
never...
are producer related well, sides, aren't they? I mean, as the director.
Our producer does keep track of all that. Like okay. The role of the producer turns out is even bigger than I ever imagined.
Mm-hmm.
And she definitely kept track of all that and does all that for
she
us.
Kind of has to.
She mm-hmm. does.
All the money stuff stops at the producer's level.
For sure.
You can ask for these things, yeah. But like your budget should be decided and defined by the board and then implemented by the producer, right?
Yeah, but I think with us, the director is the one that submits the proposal. Okay. And then the board discusses it. And then the producer keeps everybody on track. I'm the one that wanted to do the play. I'm the one with the vision. I'm the one that knows what I want to go into the sets, what I want to go into the costumes.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That kind of thing.
So Windmill's been doing shows for 50 years, though. Two shows a year for 50 years, generally largely around the same time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, have you been at the same space the whole time?
Yes.
And so Windmill knows when their shows are going to be
absolutely
in advance, even if they don't necessarily know what that show is going
exactly.
to be. So
yeah,
I wouldn't
it's all booked
that,
years in advance. Yeah,
yeah, I wouldn't think your director's proposal, does it have to include? I mean, just because your proposal probably already included it for Young Frankenstein. But if somebody wanted to submit a show for Windmill Theater, would you need to them to submit the hall rental and that component to it? Because it's probably already...
Do you know what
in
they
stone,
what they
right?
would need to do is get in touch with somebody on the executive just to get those numbers, because the royalty rates can range hugely. I mean, you can look at shows that cost $6,000, and this one is for royalties at the first time we
right.
submitted it, they wanted $24,000 for US for what we had requested, and so we need a ballpark.
Right?
I guess is what it is.
Yeah, just
we need
hall
to have
rentals
a ballpark.
Probably not coming into that.
No, like I mean, that's pretty set. Although they've certainly upped those prices in the last year, but just knowing, we just need a ballpark so that we can know whether or not it's feasible.
Right.
Because the $24,000 one that they gave us at first, it's like I don't think we can do it because we're going to lose so much money that we can't do it. So,
and who's they in this? The holders of the royalty for Greece?
Yes, Concord Theatricals holds
what
the royalties.
The heck?
So we had to contact
24 grand.
We had to contact them again and say, hey, look at, like, we're an amateur theater group. Like, this is,
yeah,
you know, we showed them our numbers for Young Frankenstein, where we lost $8,000 on the production, even though everybody loved it, but we just don't have the audiences for it. So they were able to knock it down for us, which was great. It was wonderful, because otherwise I think we would have had to look at a different show. Greece is one of their most expensive.
Really?
Because people love it.
Despite its age.
Yep.
And despite the fact that, honestly, I don't know how many people genuinely love it these days either.
Well,
so there's that too.
Our audience would suggest otherwise. We're selling out. And honestly, like Young Frankenstein, I think personally, it was probably the best Windmill play in my own humble personal opinion that we've ever had.
Wow.
I wasn't even involved in it. So that's like completely unsolicited. And it didn't sell out.
It did not.
Greece is selling out. So that tells you that it is that popular with people that
love
Greece.
How many people did you have in Young Frankenstein?
In the cast?
In the cast, 24, I think.
So there's 24. A difference mm-hmm. there, because this is a much bigger cast.
28.
There's like 32. I thought I read 32.
We had 32 in the beginning, but we had a few high school students that sort of felt like it was conflicting with their exams and their life.
Yeah, that happens.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we had three people drop out. But yeah, 28. We're just slightly bigger than
Mm-hmm.
It makes a difference. The more people you have in the show, the more people come to see it.
Right.
Yeah. I guess it's because they know people.
Well, and I thought that Young Frankenstein was well known, but apparently it's not at all.
It's not. Yeah, it's not.
It's not at all. People either love it or they don't know about it.
Yeah. I don't think anyone hates it. They just don't know about it.
Yeah, they just don't know about it.
Yeah.
There. When did you finally make the, you know, script the courage to Sticking Place and submit your proposal to Windmill?
Once Jim agreed to be on board and Laura agreed to be on board, and then she said to me, and back to the, like, the director has to do all these stuff. Windmill helps you. Like, if Laura wouldn't have said to me, here's what I did last year, copy it or use it as a guideline, I could have gone to Celia or any other director or anybody involved and said, help me out with this. And they would have in a heartbeat. Right. It's a family. So yeah, Jim said, well, I'm a farmer, so it has to be a spring play. It can't be a fall play. And so away we went and submitted it. And
yeah. When was that?
It would have been in March of last year. We normally have submissions for the next season. Our seasons are November and April.
Yep.
And we usually ask for submissions by March of the previous year. So
yes, and that's for both shows, for the
both
fall
shows,
and,
yes.
And so you're there.
Yes.
And you've received the proposal. It was sent via email or?
Yep.
Okay. So you emailed your proposal by the date of March.
And she came to the meeting actually to do a, you were at our Zoom meeting that day.
Oh, I was. It was Zoom. You're right. I'm sorry. Yeah. It was.
So came to the meeting and she's picturing, like, I drove all the way out to High River to,
she's right.
To pitch it. Great. So you had a Zoom board meeting.
Yes.
Karen was there.
Mm-hmm.
And was there a big list, a pool you had to choose from?
There was exactly one.
Oh, wow.
Which is quite often the case. It's not very often that Windmill has more than one submission for a particular season. We have had it happen where there have been two or three. And then what we do is we take those submissions and take the scripts and look over everything and come back to the next meeting. And the board will make the decision on which show we'll do.
And I think as a family, we kind of chat too, right? Like, you know, oh, Karen wants to do Grease. Okay, well, I'll wait. You know, like, I think a lot of times.
Do you think that's the case?
Sometimes.
I know that's the case. Yeah. You know, if you know, you have to understand Windmill Theater. And like when Karen says it's a family, it truly is. The people that are in the family have been there for so many years and we all know each other so well. And if we know that Karen is really pumped to start directing, I mean, we want to support that. And so if I had had a decision about...
Karen is literally showing us all injecting... it looked like you were injecting a mainline syringe in, like, just hook me up. I would like to be doing this more often. Like,
the thing is that, you know, had one of us, had another one of our directors thought, oh, I'd maybe like to submit this for the spring, but found out that Karen, who really wants to be a director, wanted to do it, it'd be like, that's fine. I'll do that next time.
Right.
Right. Like we really do support each other in our efforts. And like I said, the executive is very, very keen on mentoring new people. Because
how big is the executive?
There are 10 of us on the executive. Yep. 5 directors and secretaries and treasurers and...
Well, yeah, you've got your principal four, right? Yeah. Your secretary, your treasurer, your vice president, and the president. Is the artistic director also on the board, or are they
separate
from...
There is no artistic director.
No artistic
we
director.
We are the artistic team, the executive.
Interesting.
It's artistic family.
Okay. Yeah.
And then these other 5 individuals, six individuals, they're just members at large?
They're executive directors, and so they are on for 2 years with all of us. We just get together once a month. We talk about the business.
Only 2 years? How long is your secretary, your treasurer? And
well, I mean, Celia was the treasurer for many, many years,
right.
And we finally got somebody to take over that job. And the secretary is determined every year. I mean, I was a secretary for a lot of times.
But they can continue. And, like, you have to choose them every year. That's just what your general,
exactly.
mean, as a not-for-profit, your requirement is you have to have an AGM every single year. But is there a term limit on any of these people, or are they?
No. If they're reelected, that's just fine. Because it's determined by at the AGM.
That's
we vote on it. And the president comes in usually as the vice president, then becomes the president, and then is past president. So their term, if you're going in for the vice president, you're kind of there for 3 years unless you really, really, really don't want to be, in which case we'll just get somebody else.
Okay. So the president can serve as long as they'd like to, or is there
I mean, you'd have to be reelected. And I think we pretty much try to switch it up every time. I don't think we've had a president that carried on. Yeah. Because the next year you need to be the past president. So you don't carry on as the president.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So you're only the president for 1 year.
Yes. Yep.
That makes sense.
And then you're on as past. And then if you want to run for president again, and you might start as the vice president or...
Rotates around, though. Yeah. Is it a pretty consistent group of people that is involved on the board level?
Probably a group of about, I would say, 15 people that kind of rotate on and off and have been for years and years. And so the beauty of it is that everybody knows what's going on and there's history there so that we can talk about, oh, hang on, when this happened last time, this is how we dealt with it. Do we want to deal with it the same way? But we also are, again, really encouraging some new younger members, which is great. Our board this year has three of our younger generation. They're the children of the people that were on the group before.
Okay.
Like I said, it's a family. We have one family that has four generations in Windmill.
I mean, it's been around for 50 years.
Right.
If you don't have four, I'm surprised four is the minimum. Yeah. Like, it's 50 years. That's two generations right there.
Right. You know? Exactly.
Somebody starting as a baby in the first production could very well be a grandparent today.
Absolutely.
Yes. 50 years.
Yep. Yes. It's pretty amazing. And I think it really speaks to how well the group is managed and how well the group is run. It's just a family. I don't even know how else to say it. We support each other and we help each other to learn different jobs.
I think, well, I know you and I both have tried other theater groups. I've been in another one. You've been in another one.
Who did you do stuff with?
Painted Fish was the other one that I was with. But
with Marion.
Marion, and Marion's lovely, and Painted Fish was lovely, but there's just something about Windmill. You get involved in Windmill, and it's your family. It's like, I literally, you know, did a blind date somewhere else and loved it and done it more than once. So was my husband, but my family is my family where I will go back always. Yeah.
And you've done shows with other companies as well?
Yes, Front Row Center. Three shows with Front Row Center. And again, I mean, super talented, love going to their productions. But it was just a totally different feeling.
I mean, you've had 1,200 people in 50 years come through at Windmill. So as much as you say, it's a family, that's a small town. So 1,200 people is a gigantic family. There's a core group for any given community theater company that kind of makes sure that the lights stay on and a show gets put up.
Yes.
And that's true for most of the community theater companies in Calgary and the surrounding area. It does take a dedicated group of people. Now, most of the time, they last 10 to 15 years before those people who started it move on, and there hasn't been much in the way of progression planning, but it sounds like Windmill Theatre has a great deal of wonderful progression processes that allow your company to continue to exist in the modern day.
I think for us, the hardest part is keeping the young people because it's in High River and they go off to university and they go off and get jobs other places.
Or they go off and they start their own company and they do their own thing. Exactly. And you're like, you could have stayed with us and made those shows here.
But we do have an incredible number of people that have been there more than 30 years.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Which is just great. So, okay, we're moving forward. It's March. You've submitted. Everybody knew it was going to be you. You've sung it from the rooftops and shouted at people in the car long enough. You've taken it on.
Yep.
What was the most daunting task of putting this together?
Auditions are scary because everybody that showed up was fantastic.
And you had 40 people come out for auditions.
Yeah. I mean, the easy part was, you know, you're 45, nobody's going to believe you're Rizzo. You know what I mean? That was the easy part. Let's just cross off the ones who are mothers of three and, you know, genuinely pick people that could be the right age.
Why is that? Why do you, I mean?
Because we had the right age. Because we could. Because.
Seems kind of ageist, don't you think?
It's very ageist.
Okay.
But, you know, like the characters that we're looking for are high school age characters. So I found that to be daunting. I also thank God for people like Laura who are really, really good at talking to people. I mean, I get a room full of people looking at me saying, "What's your vision?" And I think to myself, I don't know. I don't have a vision. Like I do.
I know.
I genuinely do have a vision. But
is it imposter syndrome you feel? Like
I think I'm faking it. Genuinely, I think people are looking at me like, okay, you know, like, what can't you do? Like, I've literally had people say that to me before. What can't you do? And I think, well, I feel like I'm faking it a lot. Whereas Laura, she, you know, she's a...
I just exude confidence.
I know.
It's acting.
She does. I know. She does. And she is the adult in the room a lot of times. Like, I look to Laura, like, even everybody's standing there and it's like, well, who's going to say something? And I'm like hiding behind Laura and staring at Jim, like, say something.
Push her to actually the talking?
We just say, this is yours, Karen. It's your baby.
Yeah.
Like, this is what you need to talk to them about.
Yeah.
Right? This is the list.
Yeah.
Hard not stepping in?
It's so hard not stepping in. It is. But the fact is that if you're going to mentor people, you got to not step in. You have to let them
fail.
They
have to let them succeed or fail on their own.
Yeah.
But where they mentored really incredibly was we had a 2-day audition process.
Right.
So I watched.
Is it normally a 2-day audition process?
Okay. Yes. Yeah. So I watched. I mean, I said some words, I said some things, I probably interrupted myself twice and turned red, but I watched them and I watched what they did and I watched what happened. And then the next day it was like, off you go, Karen.
You've been choreographer, you've been in audition rooms before and done that. What was it, just you felt like you didn't know what you were looking for? Or?
It was new.
Okay.
It was new. And
you're in charge?
What I'm was in new charge. About it? Yeah. Well, honestly, I mean, I've been in charge of choreography too. But, you know, the very first time I did choreography, I did it with another girl.
Yeah.
It wasn't all me. And then the first time I choreographed on my own, I felt like, okay, this I know.
Yeah.
Do I think I can direct another play again? Absolutely.
Oh,
do I
wonderful.
Know Laura's going to do it with me?
Wait. Direct another musical or direct another play?
Show. I know. I've learned.
Because those are different things. And I think what a lot of people don't realize is when you're the director of a musical, you have two people holding your hands.
Yes.
Because it's not just a show. You have a musical director and you have a choreographer.
Yes.
So anytime people burst into song, you get to walk away.
Yes.
You still have to be there.
Yeah.
But I don't know why, because the choreographer is making them go about the stage and the musical director is making them do all of the sounds.
But I totally disagree, because I believe that the director has to work with those people. For choreography especially, to me, choreography for the sake of dancing is not useful. Choreography needs to move the plot along. And I think that sometimes as a director, you do have to step in and say, hang on, or even before the choreography starts, like, where do we want to go from the beginning of this piece to the end of this piece?
Right.
Same with music, right? Like, I don't think, I know people that direct that do just walk away and have nothing to do with it.
And that's
fair. I think it's to the detriment of the show.
I disagree.
Oh,
I think
you?
If they walk away, they're saying, I trust you. Because whenever people burst into song, if it's wrong or doesn't sound great or whatnot, they're not going to blame the director. They're going to blame the musical director. It's your vision that's... Now, should there be a conversation that says that we're both in alignment and in agreement on what that's going to look like? Absolutely.
Right.
Doesn't always happen.
Right.
But loathe should ever be a director to interrupt a musical director's rehearsal to
But to plan ahead, absolutely.
Yes.
To plan ahead, absolutely.
And they did that. Because I think the first thing I really choreographed all on my own was Joseph. And it was dance for the sake of dance. And I watched What Would Donny Osmond Do and all those things. And actually, Laura was our narrator. And one day she said to me, would you give me some choreography? Like, give me some choreography. I'm like, what are you talking about? You're the narrator. Look at you. You're perfect.
Just go stand there and be nice.
Yeah. And I think in this play, they kind of did say to me, like, well, I didn't choreograph this. My daughter did.
Oh,
but
wonderful.
My daughter
and
is
your
actually,
daughter.
Both daughters, Brooklyn and Corey Dale Stevenson. They've done Young Canadians forever. So they're talented, amazing people. But
they're skilled.
They're skilled. So Laura says to me, Sandy can be a doormat. Do we want Sandy to be a doormat? What do we want out of Sandy? Maybe Karen, have you ever thought that perhaps, you know, Sandy is kind of a bad girl, and the only reason she's not a bad girl is because her dad won't let her be a bad girl, and maybe she's just a people pleaser, and maybe the ending is Sandy being true to herself, you know? And she's the one that it was like, okay, this isn't Greece just for the sake of Greece. Where is this plot going? What's happening?
Right.
And That's the kind of thing you get with mentorship. Like, that didn't occur to me on my own, right? Like, she made me think a lot more than I ever thought about anything on my own. It's like, what? Summer Lovin', it's a beautiful number. Let's do it. You know?
Oh, and is that where you walked in like, I just want to see pretty on stage? Is that what your hope was?
No, I mean, no. I want high energy. I want...
That's still pretty.
Well, it is. Okay, yeah, you're right. I guess yeah. I did. I want pretty on stage. I absolutely do. I want to hear amazing singing, amazing harmonies, and pretty. I want to dance.
I want to see live what I remember from the movie and I remember from my childhood of listening to the record. Is that what you were hoping for? And you're that's all I want out of this?
Pretty much.
And this then is... people were like, you need more?
Well, Laura, well, she didn't say you need more. Honestly, if I would have said to Laura, I'm going to do exactly what I remember and blah, 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 she would have let me.
Yeah.
But she's got the skill where she can gently lead you down a road you didn't know you were going to go down. Mm-hmm. But she'll also stop. She would never push anything on me.
Oh, good.
If I said, this is my vision, she'd go, great. And I support you and good on you and I'm proud of you.
The reason why that happened was because one of the things that I didn't like about Grease was the idea that Sandy changes for the sake of getting the boyfriend. And that always bugged me because I think that's a really bad message to send out to teenage girls.
It's a send up of the times because there were so many shows happening in around that time when it was created in the 70s where the guy would be changed by the girl and he would become something new to satisfy and to make sure to win her over. He became somebody new.
Right.
So they flipped it and everybody's been talking about it ever since.
Well, he does, though. He changes, too. John Travolta.
Everybody changes.
Changed in the movie to please the girl. But then the girl's like, meh.
In some of the reading that I was doing prior to it, I mean, it was talking about the idea that one of the things that they were trying to do is show the outsider group, right? These teens that didn't conform.
Mm-hmm.
And this whole idea of conforming to what people expect you to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that that was a more interesting angle to take than the I want the boy kind of angle. And so we really tried to incorporate that into the show by showing Sandy as somebody who is conforming and maybe just wants the whole revolution of herself. She actually wants to be who she is rather than the person who her parents or society wants her to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it works. I love it. But that was her.
Oh, great. Not to get into teen pregnancies and the who you are is who other people see you to be components of Grease that I find problematic. Moving past that, though, we're still back in auditions. And who's all in auditions with you?
Well, Laura and Jim, my co-directors. And then
Brooklyn was there as well.
Oh, the choreographer. Yes. Brooklyn was there. So and Corey.
Four people in the audition room sitting at the table?
Well, it's in the hall, yeah. But we all sit at a table. And again, like, I've been in auditions. I know how they work. But, you know, assembling people, sign up here, do this there.
We have open auditions.
Okay.
So it's like a concert. Everybody sits in the audience and they go up and do their thing.
Holy
and everybody's
moly.
Watching.
Oh, yeah.
And it's super supportive. And I know people are like, I can't believe you do that. No.
So this is America's Got Talent.
Yep.
It is.
High River's Got Talent.
Yep.
It really
sort of
is.
Audition.
And these were like some of the best auditions we have ever seen. Oh, my goodness. People blew us away.
Why is that?
The amount of talent, the singing skills, the just
acting while they sang, like the ones that did the, you know, like a big number. And the audition number one was a little nerve wracking because we had one boy and it was like, but audition number two.
Are you talking about days for auditions?
Yeah, because we have 2 days auditions. Yeah. Audition number two, when the boys started coming in, we're like, okay. And we knew you watched those kids on stage and you watched what they were doing and we knew this is going to be good. Like, I remember thinking, oh my God, this is going to be so good. And we're doing it because we have the boys.
No, we have enough people
to do it. Yeah.
If you didn't have enough boys, would you have cross-cast?
We actually did cross-cast.
Oh,
yes.
Great.
Yeah. My daughter plays duty.
And she auditioned as duty. She came out, she wanted to audition as duty and she knocked it out of the park. We had boys that aren't T-Birds. It's not like, you know, she earned duty. She is duty.
Oh, good.
And she, thank goodness for her too, because she brought out some of her friends from UFC. They all did Grease together. Mm-hmm. And she brought out some boys and girls from that too. So that was
they had already done Grease.
They did Grease last year.
Yeah.
Yeah. She and a friend had done Grease with the University of Calgary Musical Theatre Group. And then the other ones that came were her high school friends who were involved in Legally Blonde, and they got shut down by COVID. So they never got to do a show together.
Oh, okay.
And so she talked them into coming out. And now
so
I think
why did they want to do Grease again?
Because it's Windmill and because they had the chance to do it with their high school friends.
Yeah.
And so...
Yeah, that's what your daughter said. Just to play with her friends again was...
And
yeah.
now that her friends are out here, they will be out here for other
they
shows. We know they love it.
Yeah.
They're willing to drive with me. I got the mom van that takes them all out to High River every rehearsal.
Wow. And how often do you rehearse? Is it 3 times a week?
3 times a week. Yeah. Mondays, Wednesdays, and then Sunday afternoon.
A Sunday afternoon and then a Monday rehearsal 2 days in a row. Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. And so it's out there in High River and you have your rehearsal space there in High River too. Is that a Windmill's?
Yes, it's at the center, the Highwood Center. Yeah, we've had a wonderful relationship with the Highwood Center over the years. Windmill is probably their biggest renter. And so we're able to use the stage.
Just 2 times a year and you're the biggest renter.
We really are.
Wow.
Yes. Small town.
It's
not that small.
Yeah. Well, we're consistent though, right? Yeah. I mean,
it's a guaranteed rental Monday nights,
exactly.
Wednesday nights, Sunday afternoons. And then for the 2 weeks of the show, we basically have
the whole thing out.
Have the whole thing.
So you have the Highwood. You're doing, is it 3 months of rehearsals? What time did rehearsals start for this production that went up on Friday last week?
We started immediately. Like we had 2 days of auditions at the beginning of January and the following Wednesday. The auditions were Sunday, Monday, and the following Wednesday, off we go.
And so we're making it sound like it's the easiest thing in the world to put up a show and pay for the rights and get all of this together and do a proposal. What's been hard about bringing this show to life?
You know, it's funny when Laura said some people go out there and they just wing it. I did sit down with my co-director, Jim, and I said, okay, let's block it. Like we did, you know, Laura and Jim helped me. Well, they did the rehearsal schedule because they know like 3 minutes per page of a script or whatever they know that I don't know. Laura knows how long people need to learn a song. I don't.
Well, it depends on the person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, so that was done. And then I said to Jim, well, okay, like, should we sit down and block the play? And he said, oh, we'll kind of do it on the fly. I realize now I don't think he meant it like that. He never showed up unprepared. But personally, I'm directing. Okay, we're going to do this on the fly. So the very, very first rehearsal, I'm standing there and I'm grinning at the cast thinking, we're doing this. And Jim said to me, where do you want him, director? And I know I turned beet red. I said, I was stammering. My script is on the table behind me. What do you mean? Where do I want them? Like, what? And I went home. I said to
just right then and there.
No,
she was out of there.
Jim saw me turn red and stammer and lose my shit. And so he took over and he did a great job and good on him. And I went home and I said to my husband, well, turns out, you know, I'm in way over my head. This was a dumb idea. I can't do this. I suck. And he just said to me, and actually Laura has said to me too, did you ever show up to choreograph a play without knowing what the dance numbers were? Mm-hmm. And the answer is no. And it's, well, why would you show up to direct a play and not know exactly where you want everybody to stand and what to do? And so I thought, yep, you're right. And so that to me was like the biggest learning curve and probably the roughest day. Like I was sick to my stomach when I thought, no, I can't do this. Turns out I am faking it. Mm-hmm. So anyways, after that, I sat down and it's funny. I thought it was an epiphany, but Laura actually suggested it to me a long time ago when I did choreography. I was in the shower and I thought, I'm going to whip out a game board, my sorry game board with all the pieces, and I'm going to name each piece. There's Duty. He looks like, you know, Jesse from Toy Story. And that's how I'm going to block the whole. And I said to Laura, hey, I have this great revolution. And she goes, what are you talking about? That's how you choreographed.
That's how I told you.
I'm like, we did? Like, I forgot that was even. But that's what I did. I labeled all the board pieces and that's how we blocked the play. And, you know, Jim and I think we kind of took turns blocking until I think he realized, okay, I had this. I knew. And after that, I'm like, are you doing the scene or am I? And he said, no, you do it. And it was pretty cool. So that to me was the hardest day.
And so who's your stage manager?
Our stage manager is Laura's neighbor, Linda.
And my wife, Karen.
And her wife, Karen. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
there's two stage managers or?
Yeah.
They work together, one on each side of the stage, partly because we're using a scrim because we have projections.
Yeah.
And so Karen's job is really moving the scrim up and down. And Linda broke her hand, so her thumb is out of commission. So yes, we needed an extra person there. And we actually have a third, an assistant stage manager on the other side doing that side.
Who's calling the show? Which stage manager's calling the show?
That would be Karen. She's okay, the one with the headset.
Karen's principal. That's right. And so did both of them attend all rehearsals or just principally Karen?
See, we don't normally have the stage managers coming until we have something for them to see in terms of
to manage,
right? Because I mean, a lot of our rehearsals, what we do is we do music, we do the choreography, we do the blocking, kind of all as one for a scene. But we find that they don't, I mean, they can sit there for the whole rehearsal, but we don't find that it's really necessary until we're closer to the date. So she's been there for about the last month, I would say.
Great. So is she the one who's taking notes for entrances and exits and
absolutely, yes,
monitoring line issues and anything like that too? So that's Karen principally handling that? Okay, great.
Yeah.
And who's doing your lighting design for this show?
That was Brett Rowland and worked with Eric Baxter, who has done lighting before. Brett's back. He was, again, a son of a founding member, and he was gone for a while, but now he's back in High River, and so he's back doing lighting.
That's wonderful. Lots of cues in this production? There should be. It's Greece.
Yes, actually there is, because there's so many dream sequences where the lights have to change. And
for dream lovers, yes, of course. So how many cues?
Oh gosh, I wouldn't have a clue.
No, I don't know.
Director should know how many cues there. Did you do a paper tech?
We don't need to know. Our lighting guy needs to know.
But you weren't there for the paper tech?
We were all there for all techs, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So paper tech, you would know. You didn't do the count?
Well, I don't count. I just trust our lighting guy to know what he's doing.
Yeah, like we go through it all and they've got it all written down and we've got it all written down. I wouldn't write it down. That's like somebody asking me, how many lines do you have?
I know, right?
I don't have a clue.
You don't count your lines?
I don't count my lines.
Okay, that's fair. I mean, because there's a sequence for the cues, usually you would know how many cues a show has.
That's up to Brett to know.
Brett might know that.
But
answer.
If you were there for the paper tech, they would have been numbering the cues at the time. So
I wouldn't have been numbering.
I don't think he numbers them.
You don't need to number them. Yeah. But
I don't
know
that there's number.
Well, I don't think he numbers. He sits with his script and he's got it.
So stage manager doesn't call the show, and
she just says lights up.
Yeah,
you know they're ready.
Yeah.
Lights up, and then he knows when to put them down because that's the end of the scene or whatever. And
right.
Yeah.
But he's working off of calls happening at this point.
We have headsets that connect us all. So
we all talk
on stage doing stuff too?
I'm doing sound actually.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Because we're using the tracks, the stage tracks. So I'm doing music, and then Karen sits beside me with a little iPad and she's doing the sound specialist.
Laura
effects.
Says, ready to honk the horn? And I say, yep. And then she goes, go.
Wait,
and
you're doing sound.
I'm assisting Laura with sound.
Oh,
she's
my
in charge.
Goodness.
I just hit the button when she says
that
hit the
is
button.
Something that we could not find somebody to do.
Nobody would do sound. So Laura being
like
Laura,
I would be doing sound I would be running the music, the tracks, and normally Mark Milligan, who is our sound guy, would be sitting and he would be doing sound. He would be adjusting volumes and doing the special effects, like the sound effects.
Yeah.
But he was not available and we asked probably a dozen people and nobody was available. So I said, okay,
so
I will do
sound. Nobody's calling you to do those things. Or it sounds like maybe you're calling to do those things.
I guess so. I mean, it's in my script and I know when it's coming up and I'm watching the play. Like we're sitting at the back, so we see the whole thing.
You're
right?
in the booth.
So, and then,
booth,
oh, there's
marks.
No booth. It's called the table.
That's why I put it in quotation marks. Yeah. So many places don't have a formal
and
booth.
I'm really glad that Karen's there doing it because sometimes you need to be hitting a special effect and turning on a track and adjusting the volume. So
you would.
It's nice.
And you
don't have
that sequenced into one button push?
No, we do not.
Oh, okay.
Nope. Even trying to figure out music is on our windmill computer. Sound has to be on something else. I don't know. Husband bought an iPad.
Or?
No, we're using Stage Player, I think it's called, from Concord. And then we're just using
an iPad.
Because Q-Labs have put all of that in together for you. We can talk about that post. Right. I don't know if we necessarily need to get into technical aspects of sound
management. Yeah, I think that's what Mark would be using.
Yeah.
But the fact that I've never done sound before, Mark said, you know what? We're not even going to put the floor mics out there because that's just another level of
complication.
Potential feedback and things. And so we just said, okay, everybody,
project.
Speak up. Project.
So do you normally use tracks, or do you have a live band sometimes? What is when you normally do?
The first time we used tracks was last year with Young Frankenstein.
Oh, wow.
And prior to that, we'd always had live music.
And who often plays in our shows, Laura?
Not.
You.
Sometimes.
Well, if she's not starring on stage, you do connect the band.
I really felt like with Young Frankenstein, we needed stage tracks because the score is so beautiful.
It's complicated.
And it's super complicated. And so rather than try and have a band, I thought, you know what? And it worked out so well because you have the rehearsal tracks that anybody can access and it's never changing. It's always exactly the same every single time.
Yeah.
Nobody makes mistakes. You just carry on.
So did you use Music Score, whatever it's called? What did you use for
with Young Frankenstein? It was MTI.
Right. Okay.
And so it was MTI Player is the one. And so then this time, because we're with Concord, it's just a different format. But it's basically the same thing. And we just, you know, I've done a lot of adjusting. The beauty of Concord is that with Stage Player, you can adjust tempos and transpose things. But
that's holistic, right? Like if you change the tempo, it's the tempo's changed for the whole song. You can't change.
Oh, no, you can. No, you can actually change parts of things. It's actually really, really hands on. It was a huge learning curve
and I
loved it. And then once it's set, you just send those changes and then everybody has exactly the same music. You can pick out your notes. I mean, it was wonderful. And I find that people learn their music a whole lot faster when they're able to have it on their phone and, you know, play it in the car and practice as they're driving and things like that. Yeah. Plus, I like the sound. I don't know that I would ever, as a musical director, go back to a band unless the show called for that.
Wow. Really?
Well, just
is it a control thing then?
Or? It's a difficult sound. Level of difficulty.
Right.
I directed a full band for our show Sugar.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And trying to get everybody in the same room at the same time was near
impossible.
You said
direct. There's a lot of different
musical
things.
Director.
So your musical, were you also the orchestral director too?
Yes. The musical director is always the orchestra, like you're, the conductor as well.
At Windmill. Okay.
Yes.
You're listening to this. That is not the
case.
That's
not the way other people do it.
Yeah. Most
right.
should not.
No.
Because it's just too much work. Well, can you imagine doing 3 rehearsals a week?
Yeah.
Just for all of these singers. And then you're doing an additional 2 or more rehearsals a week for the orchestra as well. That's 5 days.
Well, what we would do is like the day, I mean, when I did that big band, and that was probably the biggest band that we had, there were about 13 players in that band.
Yep.
And so, I would be at the hall at 10 o'clock on Sunday mornings and we would rehearse until 2 o'clock rehearsal. And then we would have that rehearsal. But that was it because that's trying to get people together and trying to find instrumentalists is really difficult.
Yeah, they're
in
hidden
High
away.
River. They really are. And it's
just
getting harder
too.
And harder. And, you know, like I was talking about trying to find a pianist.
Yeah.
Piano players are starting to get very hard to come by.
Free.
At least free.
Piano players.
Exactly. People who don't expect money. And quite frankly, we don't pay. It's a volunteer
thing. Of course. This is
completely.
Community theater.
It is. But people do expect sometimes that they're going to get paid. And it's like, I'm sorry, we have no budget for that.
It is fair that people expect
Absolutely.
To be paid.
Absolutely.
This is
Absolutely.
Like if you're asking somebody to come in and be your accompanist in rehearsals for Grease or for any production, they have to come with a degree of skill and talent
exactly.
and ability that they have honed over years and years and years.
Yes.
You've cast someone in their show. This may be their very first show. They may not know even how to read music and you're still going to cast them in the show. And there's a difference because at the end of the day, that person is going to get a whole bunch of applause and acclaim and recognition on stage. Your rehearsal accompanist never gets that. They're lucky if they make the program.
Right.
So.
Only from the cast.
Yeah.
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 And that's a very different sort of
It is. And so thing. I find then that these production tracks are easier. It's so much easier as a musical director to do it with tracks.
Right.
And I like the sound of it. I think it sounds great.
And you can change it for the cast and then have it on your phone and sing along.
I think it's okay.
You prefer a live band?
I think that if I'm going to go see a show, I want that experience. I want all of that.
You want all of that
to be
yes.
there. But the problem is that there's a degree of skill that might not, like, your first and second violinist may not be the very best violinist, and they might have some difficulty. And anytime they make a mistake or it's, you know, a squeak, it's noticeable,
it
it's
totally
detectable
is.
And can take things right away.
Yes.
So there is that.
Yeah.
What's been hard for you?
Actually, this one has been so fun. We've had such a great time.
I think you've already said what's been hard for you. And that was holding your voice, like letting Karen.
That is probably the hardest thing for me,
right?
Is not being a director, because often I've worked kind of at co-directed things, but I do the musical side as well. Mm-hmm. And it has been hard holding my tongue. That's probably, you're right, that's probably the hardest thing. But
what a great thing to be hard.
I know,
to have
right?
Hard, right?
Right. But what I did was I really chose the things that I thought were very important. And those are the ones that I brought to them. And I said, look at that. I would really like you to consider this or this in terms of staging or in terms of how can we make this funnier? How can we make this work better with the audience? And that's what I've stuck to. And I think it's worked out very well.
And I love it. I wanted that from you and Jim, because I don't think that I'd have the perfect vision all the time. Like, I'm not perfect. And when people come up with ideas, I'm like, Laura, she'll be like, I was just thinking about this. What do you think if? And I'm always like, yeah, the drive-in. We had done the whole Danny at the drive-in and it's all rehearsed and we're all ready to go. And they're driving home because she drives the kids back. And her and Danny are talking and, you know, and Laura texts
Danny's
me.
The character. Who's the actor?
Gus Ransom. Fantastic. But, you know, he's chatting with Laura and he's not loving this and she's not loving that. And she texted me, do you mind if? And I said, no. Like, and that's the beauty of frankly, Laura. Like, if she wants to do something, go. Just do it. Because I know
that's
it's
not the beauty
be
of Laura. That's the
that's
beauty of Karen.
That is totally the beauty of Karen. Well, and the beauty of Windmill is that you can trust people.
You can trust them.
Yeah.
Anything Laura's going to do, I trust. Seriously, though, it's true.
She's nuts.
No.
Would you do it again?
I can't wait to do it again.
And what would you do differently?
I don't know. Honestly, nothing. I would show up day
one.
You
have to do something.
Day one, I would know better what I'm doing, but I can't think of anything. I can't. Off the top of my head, I genuinely can't. It's been fantastic.
I mean, that's great. It's going to be wonderful in that regard, but there's nothing you'd do differently the second time around?
Show up day one, better prepared.
Okay. I mean, that is definitely a big part. What does that mean, being better prepared day one?
Well, just to have day one, like I said, like the story I told you sooner, that was my bad day because I didn't know what I was doing day one and I didn't come prepared.
What would that preparedness look like?
Well, I would know exactly how I'm going to block that scene on day one. Pretty much that's it. There are things like I've watched Laura do team building. Okay, we're going to play this game. Okay, we're going to sit in a circle. Okay, we're going to do duck, duck, goose. You know, that kind of thing, which I knew she was going to do and I relied on her.
Why are you letting her do it?
Because she's done it before. I'm new. And she's a teacher. And she has the games in her head that I don't know, like this toss salad game.
Now you have the games. Would you do it next time?
100%. The kids loved it. And the adults loved it. And I loved it. We all loved it. That's the kind of team bonding thing right off the bat that people are, you know, you get to play before you start. I would do that. But I would also defer to Laura to do it for me because I'd love it if she does the next show with me.
So I want to do nothing different. I want Laura to be there and hold my hand the whole time again. And
I'm not good at raising
her hand on the small of my back.
It's not a hand holding. It's a team. It's a team effort.
It is a team.
It really is.
Yeah. I will take credit. I think I did a great job. I think I could have done some things differently. Maybe. I don't know what. Don't ask me specifically because off the top of my head. I thought you were going to ask me, like, what, Karen? I would have. I know you were. But yeah, it's a team. And I love that. I don't think that I'm sitting here going, well, I'm a doormat. Everybody do it for me. But I love the family and the team of it. I love that Laura has good ideas. I love that Jim had great ideas. I love that my daughters had fantastic.
Were you taking ideas from the cast too?
Fantastic.
Were you allowing them to explore on the stage?
100%. 100%. As a matter of fact, I kept saying that to them. Treat this like a cartoon. Go so big, it's ridiculous. You can go bigger. You can do that bigger. And if they tried something, great. Try it harder.
Did anybody get too big?
I don't think we have. I don't think that anybody happened.
You keep saying, like, everybody always says, do it bigger and do it bigger. Do it bigger. But nobody ever says, okay, that needs to be smaller.
I don't think
that's
you can do.
That happens so infrequently.
Genuinely,
I know, right?
I don't think you can do Grease too big. I think it is a big spoof fun. Like, it's so cute. One day they were doing one of their dance numbers and our Danny, Gus, you know, stepped on Finn, Roger when they, you know, he started going the wrong way on a dance move. And Danny literally shoved Roger. Like, he practically hit him. I loved it. I'm like, can we hit Roger more? Like, it's so dumb how things like that happen. But I swear, like, the T-Birds are black and blue by the time this is over, because I'm like, hit each other. Not in a bad way. But you know what I mean? They're so big and they play off of each other. And T-Birds, they came in so big, they made the girls bigger. They made the Pink Ladies bigger.
Right.
I think that we gave them all the opportunity. I mean, the beauty of driving back and forth and having all the T-Birds basically in my car every rehearsal was that we did get to talk about things. And they came up with great ideas. And it'd be like, just try it and see if they like it. And if they don't like it, they'll tell you don't do that. And, you know, and if they like it, they'll say, keep that in.
Yeah.
Because it's fun.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
So I think it's important to let actors get into the character and make that character come to life. Right.
Yeah.
In the way that you feel that that character needs to.
Yeah.
Come
you
to
give
life,
them structure,
right?
And then you make it big enough for them to play inside it. You create the frame. They make the picture.
Exactly.
It's really important.
But don't distract either. Right. Drive in. Don't throw popcorn into each other's mouths because we're supposed to be watching Danny and Sandy, not you guys.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything you do needs to drive attention back to the person that the audience needs to be following to get the plot and understand what's going on. Yeah.
Exactly. That's great.
What kind of director would you say you are?
Collaborative. I think I really want input. I'm not a drill sergeant at all. I think I'm extremely collaborative. I want other people's ideas. I want everybody to have fun. Mm-hmm. I want them to want to come back. I want them to love it as much as I do. I think I'm very open. I think I'm extremely approachable. I think I'm fun. I think I'm kind.
I would say you're right.
Oh, thank you.
That's lovely. And what do you want audiences to have walked away with from having seen this show, other than the dinner that they've eaten at your dinner theater production versions? What do you want audiences to take away from having seen Windmill Theater Players' production of Grease?
I want them to have had fun. I saw a friend of mine shared a post on Facebook that I posted. Opening night was a dream, blah, blah, blah. She shared it. Her friends were commenting under it. People I don't know. And they were saying things like, what a huge undertaking. What an amazingly talented cast. What a fun night. I was singing along. I couldn't believe it. Like, way to go, Windmill. That's literally what I want. I know I'm supposed to want some big growth moment. But what I genuinely want is for people to just feel like they were super entertained and just loved it. Just had a really good feeling and nostalgia.
I get the feeling that what you really wanted at the end of the day was everyone else to have had the experience of you as a little girl watching your mom with a
when
mop.
I was 9 months old watching mom mop. That no, I'm kidding. But yeah, actually, yes. I mean, like I say, I knew then that this was going to be good before I even saw the show. And it was. And I remember it vividly. I don't remember another time my mom mopped the floor.
No, why would you? It's mopping.
Right, exactly.
Thing that happens.
Yeah.
Usually they're mad when they're doing it. So you don't want to remember those anyway.
Mom's a bit of a clean freak. She enjoyed mopping. But you know what
Even
I mean?
Even if they enjoyed mopping, they're not enjoying the mess that they have to mop. Yeah. So how about for you?
For me, all of those things. And I also want them to go away thinking, I liked the way that it didn't focus on the boyfriend thing. That the focus was just a little bit different. I want them to go away with just maybe a different idea about Grease, because the people that I find that don't like Grease, it's because of that, because it's very shallow. So I guess for me, I wanted them to go away thinking, oh, hang on, there's actually something more in there than what I originally thought was in there. Mm-hmm. But again, and I also want to draw people to Windmill. Yeah. I mean, Windmill dies if we don't have audiences.
Yeah.
And so I do. I want them to walk away thinking, holy cow, what a great show. You could tell that the people on stage were having a wonderful time and that this is a relationship group. And maybe, hey, maybe I want to join that group. You know, let's recruit some more people. Let's recruit some more people that are interested. Yeah.
And let's recruit them for our next show, which is going to be Shrek.
Shrek. Our 100th show.
In the fall?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
That is something else. So it's done. It's on stage. It closes this coming next week, I believe.
Mm-hmm. And this weekend's the last one.
And it'll all be said and done. And what is it you're going to take away from this experience, Karen? What's the memory you're going to have that you'll cherish?
I'm not faking it. Maybe I actually can do this.
Oh, wow. But is there any new friendships you've made, any moments that have happened on stage or in rehearsal that you just want to cherish and recall?
Yeah, I mean, this whole cast, there was probably a small handful of people that have done Windmill before. there's people that I've seen in other shows that I've never been involved with, and definite friendships, definitely getting to know people better. Yeah, my kids feel the exact same. They've made new friends doing this.
Is this the first time you've been this sort of production side with your two girls?
I've choreographed before, and I've dragged them in and had them help me come up with moves.
That's a little bit
ideas.
Different though, isn't it?
Just letting them go with it, you mean?
Well, they're now the choreographers and you're the director.
I love it. Yeah, and I love it. I'm proud of them. I beam with pride.
And all those dance moves on stage, they weren't you. You didn't make those happen.
Well, the one shaky finger move is kind of something I did do, but...
one moment.
Yeah, that one.
Remnants of
that
Joseph.
That one move, yeah, that I did in Joseph. But yeah, no, that's all them. And I believe in a musical. I mean, I think the acting is always so important in any show, but singing and dancing, that's what you have to have good in a musical or it's boring.
That's
and
a
we
third
have,
of the show.
Absolutely. Well... okay, so quick story. Right when the executive first said, yeah, we're going to do this, I watched a few YouTube videos of sort of amateur Grease, and they were bad. They weren't bad, but they weren't high energy. They weren't amazing.
They weren't what you were looking
for. They weren't what I was looking for. And I thought, uh-oh, what if this isn't going to be what I thought it would be? And genuinely, I think that the music that Laura has brought to it and the choreography that I'm sorry, my own kids did, the energy and the excitement and the show, I think is fun to watch.
It's amazing how much pride you can have in something you had absolutely nothing to do
right?
with. Because you're like, well, that's my 50% of my DNA is in that creature there.
Gave birth. No, I know. Yeah. I know.
And 50% of my DNA is
our costumer. Yeah. She was like, she paid attention to what pair of socks, Joanne Newton. She's big with windmill. And she was literally like, these socks, not those socks. These shoes, not the, like, things that nobody's going to notice what socks somebody is wearing. Like,
well,
all
you
of
did.
Those things.
Exactly.
And you're going to remember that going forward.
Absolutely.
And she was one of the people that was at every single rehearsal.
The costumer?
Yes.
Yeah, usually they are.
Yeah.
They're just
so
not
dedicated.
Sitting in the rehearsal.
No.
Or they're off in a side table stitching away.
Exactly.
Sewing and attaching sleeves to jerkins.
Exactly. Yep.
How about for you?
For me, I mean, the memory of my daughter who plays Duty, and I mean, I knew Gus because he was in Young Frankenstein, but getting to really know her other friends so well and just the drives back and forth, it's just so joyful.
How long a drive is it?
It's about a 40-minute drive from my house High River. Yeah. And so, yeah, getting to be in the car with those kids an hour and a quarter every day, every rehearsal, and just hearing their talking about it and just hearing them be so excited.
Yeah.
And some of them, it's their first time on stage. And that, I think, is just a real blessing to be able to watch young people find themselves. Mm-hmm. Drama to me is the best.
Yeah.
The best. Just the way that people find themselves with drama and find their voice and find their humor and that to me is.
And their tribe, right?
And their tribe, right? So many people come into drama because they don't have a tribe.
Yeah.
And it's so wonderful that this group accepts everyone, all mm-hmm. the wackadoos and all the, you know, the kids can fly their freak flag.
Now everyone's going to wonder which are the wackadoos in this tribe.
we're all a little whacked.
Yeah, look at us.
Yeah. And just being able to see some of them like really be embraced by the group is wonderful.
Well, with 28 people on stage, let alone the dozens of people, it sounds like, working backstage and trying so hard to make this show come to life. You have very few limited opportunities to come and see this show, as it will be closed and done. But the memories that will have been made by the people who were in it and the people who have seen it will stand the test of time due to the joy and care and attention to detail that the two lovely ladies have put forth and brought into existence. After many years of whispering to others, you finally whispered to yourself, Karen. And I would just like to say thank you so much for bringing it to life.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Thanks to everyone else for listening.